Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, and a good evening, I guess, or at least it's evening where I am. Some of you, it's late afternoon. Today, I want to talk about personal
finance.
Welcome,
everybody, and a...
there we go. Good evening, and we're going to talk about personal finance today, and I want to give you... You know, take advantage a little bit of my background, which is as a PhD in finance, a little bit of my background as a finance professor, and of course, as just as somebody who's lived a long time, longer than he'd like to admit, and just my experience. So, no stock tips. We'll talk about what I will talk about, what I am allowed to talk about. I'm not allowed to talk about some things. What a world we live in, where other people can tell me what I can and cannot talk about. But the fact is that because I manage a hedge fund and because I'm involved in a hedge fund, I cannot say certain things. So I can't be very specific. I can't give you, like Jonathan would like, stock tips. No stock tips. We're going to have to rely on you for that. But yes, the SEC does not want me saying what kind of investments you should make. So we'll talk about it in broad sense, but not in a specific sense. So very much dependent on a show like this, very much dependent on your questions, on what interests you, what questions you have, what situations you're encountering, whether, you know, so specific questions are welcome. In particular, as always, I will take questions on the Super Chat. Those will get priority, and but I am open to questions on Facebook if I can keep track of them, and even on Blog Talk Radio, if you join the chat, you can take questions over there. So I want to start out by setting kind of a broad framework for the discussion and my approach to this. And my approach is different than a lot of people's. You'll see in a minute. And talk a little bit about the context, and then we'll talk about some specifics, and then you guys will ask questions, and I'll answer those questions, and we will figure how this figure all this out. All right, let's and of course, if you want to ask questions about cryptocurrencies and anything related to finance, about the stock market, about hedge funds, about as long as it's not too specific, as long as it doesn't constitute investment advice, we can talk about it. No investment advice. Thoughts on Dan Penna and his advice? Don't know who Dan Penna is, so sorry. We can talk about the state of the market a little bit and things like that, but let me set the context first, and then we can talk about your questions. So hold on a little bit about your questions. And again, I'm going to give priority to Super Chat questions. So if you're really interested in having your question answered, Super Chat it. Partially because on Super Chat, a part of the advantages on Super Chat, I can see the question and I can scroll back to it and it's highlighted, whereas on the rest, it's easy for the question to get lost and the small font on the YouTube chat is difficult to see. All right, so really the question of personal finance is a question of how much you should save, how much you should consume, how much you should invest, and should you take on debt? I mean, those are the fundamental questions. So saving and investment, so the money you put aside, and then, of course, what you do with that money to put aside, how to most effectively put it aside, then how much should you consume, which is the money you don't put aside? And then how much of the consumption should you, or the investment for that matter, should you finance through debt, right? So debt, consumption, and saving and investment, all right? Those are the big three categories that we're going to talk about, right? Those are the big three categories we're going to talk about: saving and investment, debt, consumption and debt, right? And if you think about it, If you think about the amount of money you earn every month, right? You earn $10,000 a month. So you're doing fairly well. You earn $10,000 a month. You can think of it. I could spend $120 and take on debt. I could save $50, consume $70, and take on $20 of debt again. Or I can save $50 and only consume $50, not take on any debt. Or I could save $90, consume $10. I could save $10 and consume $90. Any variation like that is possible. So debt can subsidize you. Debt is, we'll talk about the benefits and dangers of debt. But debt can, debt is a substitute. Or not a substitute, in addition to consumption, right? Now, the answers to how much of each of these things one should do are totally dependent on the context in which you find yourself. So I know people who said, never take on debt. Debt is bad. No, debt is great. I will talk about how wonderful debt can be. But it depends on where you are in your life, on the context, on your specific situation, right? So here are some of the things you should be considering in terms of these considerations, right? Don't know why the stream was lost there, but hopefully things are back. Here are some of the things to consider. Age, how old are you? So if I was giving you personal advice on finances, these are the kind of questions I would ask. What is your age? What is your profession? What are your future prospects? What are your opportunities? Where do you live? That is, in a sense, what's the cost of living? What are your goals? And what's your risk tolerance? How do you deal with risk? Do you sleep well at night? Right? Don't you sleep at night? When you have a little bit of debt. Yeah, somebody writes here, Dave Ramsey would be rolling in his grave if you were dead about being okay with taking on debt. I know, Dave Ramsey is great for some people. If you score a certain, if you answer these questions in a certain particular way, you are doing, Dave Ramsey is perfect for you. But Dave Ramsey would have been awful for my life. I never took Dave Ramsey's advice, and I've done well. So it really depends on these answers. Age makes a huge difference, whether you're young, whether you're middle-aged, whether you're peak earning, beginning of earning, after you're already earning, are you retired? I mean, you cannot give personal finance advice, which is true, to everybody. Everybody has a particular context, and the advice is going to be heavily dependent on that particular context. So let me give you my story as kind of an indication for you on kind of my journey and my attitude towards debt, but from my perspective. So we're going to start when I was young and we're going to move forward. I'm not going to give you everything but we're going to start when I was young and we're going to go forward. So age, we're going to start young. Future prospects. So I don't know about you, but my attitude to future prospects was they're great. They are great. I am going to do better next year than I've done last year. I'm just going to be increasing in terms of my financial ability to earn, right? So I'm going to do better all the time. Profession. I was in a, we'll see. I started out as a student many, many, many years as a student. But my view as when I entered professional life was I'm in a profession where I can earn more and more and more money. There are going to be opportunities for me to earn more and more money. And even if my profession is limiting, there are entrepreneurial opportunities that I can take advantage of. Now notice already the attitude, right? put aside geography. We'll talk about that later. Goals. I wanted to have fun. Fun in the deepest sense. I wanted to be happy. I wanted to pursue my values. I was thinking long term, but I also wanted to pursue my values right now. I wanted a balance between the long term pursuits and the short term pursuits. I had a lot of goals, a lot of things I wanted to do. Some of them required money, some of them did not. Some of them required time, some of them required money. There was a constant trade-off between those kind of things. But I was interested in lots of different things. Right? And finally, risk tolerance. I have a very high tolerance for risk, right? I don't worry about financial problems. It doesn't trouble me in my sleep. I don't not go away. I'm always convinced that I will work myself out of whatever issues I have, right? So it's an issue of confidence. It's an issue of self-esteem. It's an issue of knowing yourself. It's an issue of projecting into the future. And it's an issue of just comfort level with risk. Since I was very young, I was a risk taker, and I enjoy taking risks, not crazy risks, not risks to one's life, although I've done some stupid things in my life. But, you know, life is boring if you're not challenging yourself, if you're not pushing yourself, and pushing yourself, challenging yourself, involves risk. There's just no other way to do it. So you have to know who you are and what you are before you really put a plan together of your finances. Because if you're very risk averse, if you're not going to sleep at night because you're taking on a lot of debt, or you're not sure where, you know, if you lose this job, you're not sure what other job you could find. If you, if you lose some money in the stock market, can you handle it? Right? If you're wiped out in the stock market, can you handle it? All right. If you're interested in the stupid things I did when I was young, you can put some money where your mouth is and ask that question. It's not the kind of question I answer for free. Let's see. So I was a student for many, many, many years, really from the age of 21, because I was 3 years in the Army, until the age of 30. I got my first job really when I was full-time job in when I was 32. So I was basically in school for 12 years with 1 year off. Right? 1 year off. And the 1 year off, I worked full-time as a construction manager. I was a civil engineer in those days. So I was a student. Now, when I was a student, it's the first attitude, both towards self and towards personal finance. I always worked, right? There was no other money. Right? My parents didn't give me that much money. I can't remember if they gave me any money when I was a student. I was married already. I worked, my wife worked. We worked side jobs. We worked summer jobs. We worked, right? We did whatever we could to bring in a little bit of money. In those days, I saved exactly zero. I didn't save any money. And I didn't care, because in my 20s, I thought, and I still think, that worrying about retirement is ridiculous. In your 20s, you should be working to establish yourself. Now, I know all the gurus, the Dave Ramseys out there, are telling you, you got to save from day one because it's easier, and it is easier if you save early. But the fact is that when you're young, what you want to do is learn the skills, develop the skills, develop the abilities to really succeed in your 30s and 40s. In your 20s, you should be learning one way or the other, whether you're going to college, whether you're doing a graduate degree, whether you're working your butt off, you're working really, really hard to learn, to figure the world out. Those are the years in which you're investing in yourself, not investing in the market, not putting money aside, not saving, but investing in yourself. Now, again, granted, I'm a risk taker. And my attitude was, I'll save one day for retirement. And who's going to retire anyway? We're gonna keep working as long as I can. So if you have that kind of attitude, where you're going to do well in the future, confidence, and a realistic confidence, not a bizarre confidence. You know, I was going to school. I was getting an engineering degree. Then I went to graduate school, get an MBA, and then I got a PhD. So the trajectory was, I'm going to make money one day. And the trajectory's always been in my life, I don't really want to retire. What am I going to do if I retire? Boring. I hope to be doing these podcasts, these video casts, whatever you want to call them, into my hundreds, right? Into my hundreds. I'll be all wrinkled and old and grumpy, but I'll still be doing this. So, age. When you're very young, now, again, this doesn't apply to everybody. This is my view. What you want to invest in is what some economists call human capital. What you want to be investing in is yourself and building up your skill set, building up your abilities, building up your capabilities so that you can save one day, you can invest one day large quantities. Now, again, if you are risk averse, if you're worried about the future, then go ahead, save if you can. Starting in your 20s, put a little bit aside and keep accumulating, right? Somebody wrote on Facebook, wrote to me on Facebook, my mom told me when I was younger to put $1,000 in my checking account, but pretend it was not there, right? And let it just grow. That's fine. That's fine. I had too many things to do with $1,000 when I was in my 20s to leave it in a bank account. And those things were more important to me than the saving into the future. And more than that, There's a whole issue of debt. And most American students today go into debt in order to get an education. And if that's your only way to get an education, then go into debt. You're investing in your human capital. You're investing in your abilities, in your knowledge, in your skill set, so that debt can be paid off and you will start saving and investing and do very well in life in the future. So I am not averse to debt. If you're studying English lit, or you're studying sociology, or you're studying some topic in a modern university where your chances of getting a job after you study it are close to zero, then don't take debt. Then you're not really studying, you're not really investing in yourself from a financial perspective. You know, you're just you know, enjoying yourself. You're taking another 4 years to have fun. Unsheld Coast says, I'm studying English. If you're studying English at a good school, a good university, it depends what you want to do afterwards. But you have to have a plan on what you're going to do with that degree. What kind of job are you going to get? I was studying engineering. There was no question I would get a job, although finding a job wasn't that easy. But there was no question I was going to get a job. If you're studying English, be careful of debt, because how are you going to pay it back? You're going to get out there with $30,000, $40,000 a year salary and with very little upside and very few opportunities. Where do you go from there? All right, so, you know, so I studied for all those years. I had all kinds of passions. I loved art. I loved music. I would go to used record stores and buy lots of used records, you know, vinyl records. I had a nice record player. So I could have saved, theoretically, right? But at least until my kids were born, I bought stuff that made my life good, that made my life fun, that I enjoyed. I wasn't so obsessed with money that I thought, I have to put money aside. No, you know, and I didn't spend anything exorbitant. I didn't go to fancy restaurants, but music was important to me. So I bought a lot of used records. I used to buy vinyl records for $1, right? But I didn't not do it, not invest in those records because, one day I'm going to retire. I mean, one day is a long time. Planning for the future means planning for the future. It doesn't mean that everything... You need to start putting money aside today for that. Again, if you think you have prospects to make money in the future. So once my kids were born, I was in grad school at the time. You know, I don't think we had any money other than for diapers, for rent, and for food. That constituted all the money we had, and for gas for the one car we shared. Luckily, we lived in Austin. Again, geography matters, and Austin, Texas was cheap in those days, and we could afford the whole thing. Then I got a job. I got my first job, full-time job, as a university professor in Santa Clara University in the Bay Area. Now, cost of living went up quite a bit. Let me just see. We've got a couple of questions here. Let me answer them before they disappear. What about health insurance when you're young? Impossible to fund a good plan on a side job as a student. Well, as a student, at least what I did was I got the university had health insurance. It was very cheap, and if I remember right, it was very affordable. I recommend a very high deductible catastrophic plan, which should be very affordable. I think if your cell phone is affordable when you're on a part-time job, you can probably afford health insurance. You do not want to get something catastrophic where it could put you in debt for the rest of your life. So to the extent that you can find, and this is why it's so tragic that we don't have a true free market in insurance, because in a free market insurance, there would definitely be products, especially for you. There would be products that were cheap enough, again, because you want a high deductible, because the chances are that you're going to be fine. You're young. But you want to protect yourself against catastrophic loss, an accident, a car hits you, you fall down the stairs, you get some awful disease. That's what you want to protect yourself against. So for that, you buy catastrophic insurance. You don't buy insurance that covers you for every little visit to the doctor, because as somebody young, you barely go to the doctor. If you can't afford health insurance at all, then you go without it, and you trust that when you get into a problem, the hospital will cover it. But I recommend having health insurance. I mean, I don't know. I can't remember how we managed this, but we somehow managed. My health insurance as a student didn't cover pregnancy, and our first kid, while I was a student, was a bit of a surprise and bad planning, but we were happy anyway. And we somehow managed to cover those costs, right? As a student, part-time job, I think I put it on a credit card and then paid it off over time. I mean, again, people overestimate how difficult things have to be. You can make things easier if you work hard and if you plan it properly. Robert asks, what investments, school, traveling, reading, etc., generated the most important return for you outside of studying Ayn Rand? Outside of studying Ayn Rand, I mean, at the end of the day, my graduate degree in finance. So if you combine my graduate degree in finance with that, that's where, at the end of the day, all of my returns, my personal returns, all of my returns have come from either work I do related to Ayn Rand or either work I do for finance. And of course, the returns on the work I did in finance are far greater than the returns I from working on Ayn Rand. But yeah, so I would say education in something that in this world is you can monetize. You can turn into something you can make money off of. So there's plenty of time for travel in life, although particularly for Americans. So this is for the Americans in the audience. I know a lot of you are not Americans, but particularly for the Americans. Americans live a very shielded life and a life with very few, particularly today, very few real experiences. So I would recommend for a lot of people, maybe even most kids, when you're 18, buy a backpack and go travel around the world. Just go see the world. Go see what it's like. Either that or wait until after college and do it after college. But either way, travel around. Go see the world. You'll get a huge return, because when you go to college, if you do it before college, I think you'll be more motivated and more focused. And if you know what you want to do before college, then go do it. Focus on that. And then take a year off before work, because I think, again, you'll be more motivated and you'll have some perspective about the world out there. most Americans haven't even seen America. I was shocked in high school when my parents took us around. We traveled all over the place. I lived 2 years in the United States. I saw more of the U.S. than 90% of Americans see of the U.S. in their lifetime, because we traveled, we went around, we saw stuff, and it's incredibly valuable. But again, the greatest value is when you know what you want is your education. I'm still young. Take my money. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Ian, for the super chat. But don't waste all your money on stuff like this, right? Okay, appreciate the talks. It was because of you I started my own business at 17. Wow, he's way ahead of the curve. And I'm learning day in, day out. Reached six figures recently. Thank you, Objectivism. Rational makes sense to me. So, yeah, I mean, if you have the ability to start a business, I certainly didn't at that age, and the business, many of the businesses I started failed over the years. So if you have the ability to start a business and go for it, fantastic. I mean, truly fantastic. And if you could make money when you're young, I mean, one of the things I watch, you know, I go, now I have money, so I go to a lot of really fancy restaurants, and I love good food. So I go to a lot of fancy restaurants, and I go to nice hotels and places like that. What really stuns me is how many young people are going to these restaurants and at those hotels. So somebody is making a lot of money when they're young, or their parents give them a lot of money for some reason. I wouldn't, but I mean, there's almost, it's almost always the case these days when I go to a very, very expensive restaurant, there's some young couples or young kids there, probably in their early 20s, and the same with very fancy, nice hotels. And it surprises me, because when I was in my 20s, I had nothing. A fancy restaurant was like once a year, and it wasn't fancy compared to fancy restaurants I'm talking about. So it's truly stunning how much wealth exists out there and how much money young people are actually making. All right. How did you realize you have to make conscious decisions about money? Or did your family always have an eye on it? I mean, my family didn't teach me about money. I didn't learn anything from my parents about money. My parents were careful with money. They were never extravagant. They lived fairly simple, given how much they made. We were never wealthy. We were in Israel. We were poor and then middle class. I mean, there were poor people. There were always poor people than us. But we were lower middle class to upper middle class. I'd say that was the range in which we lived in. And that, I'd say, translated to the United States is lower middle class, clearly lower middle class. I lived in apartments my entire life until I moved at the age of 32 to San Jose, where I rented a house. I'd never lived in a house. Cars were small, usually used, usually European, and didn't last very long. Until I was 38, 39, I had never bought a nice car. And even then, it was a used car. So I always bought used cars. I think my first new fancy car was when I was 40. The first new fancy car I bought was when I was 40, because I never had money. I never had money because I spent it. And because even when I made money, when I made what I thought was a reasonable amount of money, I spent it. Because I've always been focused on living well. And I think it's important to live well within your means, right? Within what you can. Now, when I was 32, I started I went to Santa Clara University, and I started two businesses. So I was a full-time professor, and I started two businesses on the side. One more as an investor, and one, I don't think I put any money into the second business. I put a lot of time into the business. One was, and both were passions. Both were because I loved it, and they were important goals of mine, and I wanted to pursue them. So one was a art store. It was called, you'll think this is funny, but it was called Art is Art, with the A's bigger than the rest of the font, capital A, so A is A, Art is Art. It was an art store that did framing. And we sold reproductions, posters, and photographs of what I consider beautiful art. And a lot of Objectivists, a lot of Ayn Rand admirers have the older ones. have art that they bought for me. I often go to people's homes and I go, oh, you bought that for me, because I was the only provider of that kind of art in the world at the time, because a lot of it was photographs that nobody else had. And we framed pictures. That business, in terms of the framing store part of it, my wife worked on it, and a friend of mine came in as a partner with his wife, or the wife was the partner. She actually did the framing. And we closed that business 9 months after we started it. And I think I had $50,000 of credit card debt at that point. And this is the early 90s, or the mid-90s. $50,000 of credit card debt. Now, most people would have panicked and lost it and gone crazy. And I was like, okay, well, I'll just have to pay this back. And it took me years and years to pay it back, but I paid it back. But I started a business, right? Because I was passionate about starting a business. Now, I had a job, so I knew I could earn enough at this job, although the job didn't earn much more than $50,000 a year in those days. It kept increasing, which was good. And then the second business was the business, a conference business, an objectivist conference business. Again, another passion. And that never earned me any real money. I mean, a little bits and drabs, but it was fun. It was fun. I loved it. So I made money on my being a professor, and I spent money on other businesses, and I lived well, lived in a nice house. And this is the point about debt, right? I went into debt to start this business because it was important to me. I didn't expect to lose all that money, but I lost the money. So what? So you figure out how to pay it back. And then I remember I was renting a house, and the owner of the house came to us and said, look, I'm going to sell the house. I'll give you first dibs to buy it. And I had no money, nothing. I had nothing in the bank, right? I had $50,000 of credit card debt. That's what I had. And so what did I do? I took on an 80% mortgage from the bank, and I borrowed 20%, I think, from my parents. And I bought the house. So I had 100% mortgage on a home. And I paid that. So again, I was confident in my future. I'd invested in myself, and therefore I had no problem taking on the debt because I knew I could pay it off. So it's all about investing in yourself. It's all about building yourself up, putting yourself in a position where you can do whatever you want. You can take on debt because debt isn't that big of a deal, because the future is brighter than today, and you will be able to pay off that debt in the future. Right? So again, what's his name? A lot of the money, the personal finance guys would be freaking out from my personal story. In 1998, I started a business, which today is my hedge fund. And from 1998 till today, I basically not had to worry about money because the money's been good. It hasn't been phenomenal. It hasn't been super rich kind of money, but it's been good enough to live well. I've sold I've never really invested in real estate, but my homes have done well, except my latest home, which I bought in 2004 in Southern California, which, you know, is up a little bit from 2004, but not much. But the other homes I bought and sold all made money, and I have lived well, and because of the kind of I started saving for retirement really properly only after I started my finance business in the late 90s, so in my late 30s, early 40s. And again, I was never worried about it because I always figured, yeah, one day I'll make enough money so that retirement will not be a concern. So again, I'm not saying that's what you should do. I'm just saying it depends on who you are, what you want from your life, where you are in your life, how much you've already invested in yourself, how old you are, what you consider worthy in retirement. And once you consider all those things, and is there something you really want to do? Do you have a startup idea? And it could change your life completely. Then to hell with it. Take on the debt. Take on whatever's necessary to actually go and do it. Somebody asked if I'm still buying used LPs. No, no. I've become lazy as I've gotten older, and the idea of cleaning an LP and watching the needle and making sure it doesn't scratch, half my audience is just being lost because they don't even know what an LP is. That's too much for me. Now I love things like Apple Music and iTunes and my ability to anywhere in the world at any moment in time be able to access any piece of music ever through my phone or through my digital whatever, right? That to me is the ideal. Or I can now watch on my Apple TV the Berlin Philharmonic do all these concerts. So I don't need LPs anymore. I have 2,000 LPs in storage. 2,000 records in storage, which I have to figure out what I'm going to do. I've got a good friend who I promised he gets first dibs on those records. He's going to come sometime and just go over all of them and pick and choose what he wants to take, and the rest I'll probably take to store and offload it. I don't think they'll pay me anything for it. All right, Mark asks, what do you think about saving as much as possible in your 20s? Low rent car to build a retirement balance, then living really well later. I mean, I think that's fine. It depends on what you're giving up during that period of time, right? And again, if you have an idea to start a business, the time to start a business is in your 20s or 30s. The time to take risk is before you have kids. Although I ended up taking risks throughout my life, including when I had kids. Right, so you don't want to waste, in a sense, that period of your life. Now, I wouldn't in my 20s go to fancy restaurants, fancy hotels, and not save any money. I think that would be a mistake. But if you're trying to save money for retirement instead of starting a business, instead of going back to school, instead of investing in some skill that you have, instead of doing something that gives you immense value so that it makes your life much more fun, much better in terms of living, then I would skip the saving. I would invest in all those things. So the things to invest in are a business, education, in other words, and personal values that are crucial to you, right? Like in your 20s, you should be dating. You want to find a mate, right? You want to find a spouse. So, and that's, I don't know. I guess it's not super expensive, but it's not, I'm going to work all day and all night. I'm going to put money aside all day and all night. I'm not going to see, I'm not going to go out to dinners. I'm not going to meet anybody. No, I mean, that would be a huge mistake. So it really depends on what values you have at that point in time. And don't delay those values so far into the future that they become meaningless to you. Live. So, you know, there's too much of this phenomena. And look, I'll give you an example. When I got to Santa Clara, I'll give you some numbers. My beginning salary was $63,000 a year. This was 1993. I thought I was a millionaire. That was the most money I'd ever seen in my life. I couldn't imagine how you'd spend $63,000. Very quickly, I discovered that $63,000 goes like that. I had two kids. They went to private schools. They went to Montessori schools. I had a wife who went to get a master's degree. I had rent and then a mortgage and paying back my debts on the business. And you need two cars in the Bay Area, not one. And on and on and on and on. Suddenly 62 is nothing. So then I remember sitting with another professor, and he was he one day was going to be my business partner, the guy who would become my business partner. And I think I said something like, wow, if I could make $150,000 a year, I'm done. I don't need a dime more than that. I mean, how could you spend more than $150,000 a day? And by the way, who needs a car that costs more than like $25,000? I mean, that's absurd. That's ridiculous. Why would you ever do that? Well, when I got to $150,000 a year, it went like that. And buying a $50,000 car is sweet. Right. I mean, and you know, and my wife also likes a $50,000 car, whatever. Right. So it's easy to buy a $50,000 car. And why wouldn't you? And the advantage of a car like that are multiple, from being safer and faster and cooler and more pleasant and more fun. I like driving. So my point is this. In your 20s, you can say, oh, I want to build up retirement, so I'm not going to spend anything on myself now. And then in your 30s, you can have more in retirement. You can say, oh, but that's not enough. I need to save more. And there's no end to that. You're always gonna find that you can spend more, that your needs grow, that you need more. Then orient yourself from the beginning, in my view, to what are my values? What is important to me? Yes, don't sacrifice the future for the present, but also don't sacrifice the present for the future. Find a balance. You want to enjoy your 20s. And again, I think the 20s and 30s are for really investing in yourself, work-wise, education-wise, but also values. Listen to music. Go to movies. Find a spouse. Date. Go have fun, right? All right. Lack of market correction, diversity recommended. Okay, I'm going to get to that. So how to do your investments, I'll get to that, I promise. So my point is this. You have to figure out the right balance. You have to figure out when you're going to start saving based on your future earning potential. Now, it turns out for me, I was absolutely right not to save for retirement in my 20s because I make a lot more money today. And I don't need what I would have saved in my 20s right now. It would be a drop in the bucket as compared to what I can save right now. So it's good that I didn't save in my 20s or my 30s. I didn't start saving until I was 40. That makes sense to you guys? Again, questions. If you have any questions relating to this stuff, what did I just do? All right. I'll start trying to monitor Facebook as well to see. Okay, Robert says, my friends are in med school, but favor redistribution of wealth, punishing the rich. And this mindset likely to change when they finally bring in the dollars. It might, but it might not, right? I mean, I've seen lots of people, all the way up to Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, who want to redistribute wealth, who say, raise my own taxes. But when it comes to making money, they make money, and they're eager to make money, and they push to make money. So people often don't live their ethical beliefs. So these friends of yours that have these altruistic ethical beliefs are not actually living them. Not actually living them. Or might not actually be living them. Maybe they're different. But it's no guarantee that having those ethical beliefs will actually result in you living them. Now, they'll feel guilty that having ethical beliefs is not free. There's a price to pay. Nick asks, how much debt did you end up accumulating for school at 32? None, actually. None from school itself. Because I worked throughout school. I in Israel, university is pretty much free. And I worked while I was in Israel to pay my expenses. In grad school, I worked. And then... my parents had put some money aside, so my parents did help. And that paid for my out-of-state tuition for the first semester, the first year of graduate school. And then I got a job at the university, which gave me in-state tuition, which at the University of Texas in Austin in those days was pretty low. And I managed not to accumulate. Now, I accumulated a little bit of debt coming out of school, but that's because, again, I was investing in stuff like art to sell a business. Before I left school, so I was in debt because of that. But on school itself, I didn't really take on any debt. What is your recommendation on buying a house in the U.S. according to the current market? I mean, that really depends on where you are, right? I think the current market in some places is probably a little inflated. I don't think it's nuts like it is in like it was in 2007, but I think it's quite inflated in certain parts of the market, and I would be cautious about buying, in the Bay Area or in Southern California, certain parts of Southern California. But so I think it depends. But if you're in Ohio, if you're in the Midwest, or if you're in Texas, or if you're a lot of these places, absolutely buy a house. I mean, you know, your mortgage interest is tax deductible, particularly in Texas where you don't have any state taxes, so you don't have state taxes to deduct. You can still deduct your mortgage off of your federal taxes. It's a good investment. Interest rates are still fairly low for mortgages. It's a good way to finance a home. I mean, I consider debt as a way of consumption smoothing. And this is, again, where people flip out, right? The personal finance people flip out. Debt is consumption smoothing. I can't afford to pay $500,000 for a home when I'm 30. But I'm convinced that my earnings are going to go up, that I can take out a mortgage and buy this home that I want, pay it off over 30 years, and I can live in this home for 30 years, which I couldn't afford if I had to pay cash for it. So for me, mortgages is a beautiful, beautiful thing. Debt is a beautiful thing, right? It makes it possible for you to buy something you cannot afford from the perspective of the money you have in the bank, but you can afford from the perspective of your future potential, your future earnings, and your projection of what your future is going to look like in terms of what money you're going to make and how you're going to make it. So debt is this wonderful thing that makes it possible for you to live better off of your future. You're mortgaging your future. But if your future is good, why not? Again, I don't believe in sacrificing the present for the future in a dramatic way. Yes, you should save, right? But don't overdo it. You have to put it in perspective relative to, again, your future earning and how you're living today. What gave you the stellar self-confidence that enabled you to make the super risky moves? Always had this? I always had it. I mean, in a sense, I think it's because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's choices you make as an individual, but I also think that it's because when I was growing up, I was left alone. I had no helicopter mothers. I had nobody hovering over me. I had nobody telling me what and how to do things. I came home from school, dropped my bag, said, see you, mom, and came back for dinner. I would be asked if I did my homework, but that was about it. I wandered around town. We played crazy games. We got into lots of troubles with kids. We did nutty things. But I was left alone. So I always had a confidence that I can manage no matter the situation. I'll figure it out. And this is why I say go travel around the world. Take some risk. Do something crazy. One of the ways you build up that confidence is by putting yourself in situations where you prove to yourself, I can handle this. Now, I'm not saying go nuts, right? Think about what you're doing and do stuff only if there's value in it. But don't shy away from it. You know, challenge yourself, push yourself, particularly when you're young. That's the time to do it, because when you do it when you're young, the psychological benefits you gain from that accrue over your entire lifetime. If you do it when you're older, maybe you get some psychological benefits, but it's harder because the wiring is more determined already. It's more calcified. Plus, there's less time for you to benefit from it afterwards. So the risk-taking should be in your 20s and 30s. That's when you should really push out there. And you should learn about yourself. And you should test yourself. And you should push yourself. When should one avoid debt? You should avoid debt if your prospects for the future are bad or mediocre, or if you think your earnings are going to be flat, or if you think your earnings are only going to rise very slowly. You should avoid debt if what you're gaining from the debt, it's not that important to you, right? You could live without it. So don't go into debt to go to a nice restaurant. Don't go into debt to go on a vacation. The reasons to go into debt are start a business, buy a home when it's a better alternative than renting. Renting should always be an option. Go to school. You know, buy things that you believe are essential to your happiness. Go on a date. In my case, buy some art. cheap art, but still art that maybe other people would have said you can't afford that, you're on. So again, you have to, don't go into debt on frivolous things. Don't spend money you don't have on frivolous things. But don't worry too much about saving until you get into your 30s. Particularly, you know, again, your 20s, you know, take a year off of work and go travel. Because you're not going to be able to do that when you have kids. You might not even be able to do that when you get a wife or when you get a serious girlfriend or boyfriend, because they might not want to travel. If you want to go to Italy, you've always dreamed of seeing Michelangelo's David. I know, you know, I'm projecting my dreams on other people. Then go to Italy. Go see Michelangelo's David. Take some time off. You know, again, I wouldn't take on debt to do that, but I would not save to do that. Gavin says, don't get a wife or kids. You know, that's also an option. But then you're missing out. You're missing out. So there's no fixed rules. What you need to do is clearly know what's important to you. Know what you are capable of. Know what is possible to you. Know what your potential is. Know realistically what you are capable of, what you can achieve. By the way, anybody who's slamming having a wife or a girlfriend or something like that is nuts. There's nothing better. I mean, very few things that are better than having somebody to love and to spend time with that you love. None. All right. Let's see. Dave Ramsey says you should pay off all debt except for the mortgage before saving. Thoughts? Yeah, I mean, it depends. So should you pay off all your debts before saving? Well, it depends. What's your return on savings? Right? Right now, so for the last 8 years, debt has been unbelievably cheap. So why not take on debt while you're saving? Because you're making more, if you can get a better return on your saving than it costs you debt. So the calculation is simple. How much is debt? Let's say I'm paying 2% on my debt and I can make 6% in the markets. Then go for the 6%. You're making a spread of 3%. That's a good thing, not a bad thing. Now, again, that requires risk because you're not guaranteed the 6% in the market and the 3% has to be paid. I used to, in the 90s, you used to be able to get 0% credit cards, right? Now, I don't recommend doing this to anybody, but this is what I did. I used to have 0% credit cards, and I used to roll over my debt onto 0% credit cards from a year, and then it would expire, and then I'd roll it over to the next year, right? And I saved at that time, because if somebody's going to give me money at zero, I'd be stupid not to take it. That's my perspective, right? Because I can do better than zero. I can invest the money and get a return greater than zero. I'll take money from the credit card company at zero and put it into a saving account where they'll guarantee me 2%. And I made 2%. So I'm a finance guy, right? If you're creating an arbitrage opportunity, I'm going to take the arbitrage opportunity, right? Now, again, I'm not recommending this because you have to be able to live with it and you have to be able to discipline and you have to make sure you could pay off that debt. But, you know, of course you're going to game the system, play the system if you can, right? All right, let's see. What should healthy retirees, 65 plus, who enjoy working but need more cash flow do with their substantial 500K home equity? One, sell. Two, take out a reverse mortgage. Okay, so it depends, right? I assume you have other savings. This isn't the only savings you have, because if you're spending more than you're earning, then you're going to deplete this home equity, and then what? I mean, I would do a reverse mortgage because if you like the house you live in, then do a reverse mortgage. If you don't like the house you're living, or you could downsize, or you could rent, and you want to rent, then sell the house and move. So, but if you love the house, then why not get a reverse mortgage? I think reverse mortgages are fine. I mean, the point is this. Your ideal scenario is to die with $0 in the bank, having lived well, right? I don't want anybody to inherit my money. I didn't accumulate money for people to inherit it. I accumulated money to be able to enjoy it while I'm alive, right? While I'm alive. So a reverse mortgage does exactly that. It cashes you out of the home. Over time, you spend it on living well. And at the end of the day, you don't own a house. But that's okay. You're dead. Doesn't matter if you own a house or not. Unless you're dedicated to leaving money for your kids. But, you know, your kids, by the time you die, should be old enough that they don't care. If you care enough about your grandkids and if they don't have prospects, then save money for your kid, for your grandkids. But try to give it to them while they're alive, while you're alive, so you can enjoy them spending it. You can enjoy their gratitude. I mean, really, the ideal estate plan is to die with $0, no matter what the taxes are. Okay, Bear Lynn asks, when you hear about financial advice ideas, which ones do you immediately reject or remember to think about? Any kind of person on the TV or the radio or the internet who's telling you to buy specific stocks, I immediately reject that. I don't even think about it yet. No, I'm not interested. There's no way I have any comparative advantage. There's no way, now that he said it, that even if he has special information. Now everybody has that information, so there's no advantage that I have. So I reject, like the Cramer in CNBC who yells the stock advice and analyzes stocks online. Complete BS. You run Cramer's portfolio against a diversified index fund, and you're not making any money. You're not making any money. After he's recommended it, right? If you buy right after he recommends it, not before he recommends it, but right after he recommends it. I used to, in a previous life, there was a period in which Cramer was invested in some stocks that I was invested in too. So I would monitor what he said and what advice he gave. And the advice he gave was pathetic, and you couldn't make any money based on it. So I don't trust anybody who gives specific advice, right? I would definitely stay away from people like Cramer. So that's the kind of stuff I would stay away from. We'll get in a minute to what my investment advice is. How should one view bankruptcy as an option with relation to risk debt? How should integrate this possibility? I mean, you want to minimize bankruptcy at maximum cost. Bankruptcy is not a good idea. It makes life very difficult. It shows up in your credit report. It shows up in your all kinds of files, in all kinds of places. It's going to hurt your employment ability. It's going to hurt your ability to take on debt in the future. And look, it's a moral issue. I take on debt. I make certain promises. I like to fulfill my promises. I don't want to live knowing that I didn't pay my creditors back. I'm going to pay creditors back. I'm going to do everything I can to avoid bankruptcy. To me, is a last resort. Last resort. And I think that people who use bankruptcy strategically, I just don't think that's very honorable, put it that way. Nick is looking for a good business idea. Nick Zebert. He's got some extra capital, and he's looking for somebody with a good business idea to team up and to go and do stuff. All right. I'm not vouching for anybody here, just reading off of Facebook. Right? Hey, Nick. So that's my view of bankruptcy. Okay. My view in investing for 90% of all people. So the best investment you can make is in you. The best investment in your life that you're going to make is in your own education, in your own experiences. So you're a whole human being. So again, travel, things like that. and in your own business if you have a business idea. So again, the best investment, the best way to save is to invest in yourself, is to create in you earning potential in the future so that you can make more money than you can spend. My goal is to make more money than I can spend even if I lived a super luxurious life. Now, I'm discounting private planes and private yachts and things like that. But, you know, going to the most expensive restaurants in the world, traveling to the nicest hotels in the world, flying business class, living in nice houses, not ridiculous houses, but ridiculous for me, but nice houses, enjoying myself, buying art, not for hundreds of thousands of dollars, but maybe for thousands of dollars. My wife and I just bought a new sculpture in Las Vegas. So, and we'll have that. We'll get that in a few weeks. I think here in Puerto Rico, it's being shipped to us. So I want to be able to buy stuff like that, right? So you want to invest in yourself. That is the primary thing. And your goal should be to make more money than you're going to be spending on and living well for the rest of your life, let's say from age 35 on. And that's when you save, put money aside. But even then, you might still be investing in yourself so that when you're 40s, you can make so much money that you're able to save huge amounts of money for retirement. It all depends on the circumstances. Now, if you're investing in the market, how should you invest? So I am a big believer in diversification. If you now, granted, again, I'm not giving you specific investment advice, and nothing I say should be construed as anything. So all the disclaimers associated with investment advice you just heard, and I'm, you know, but generally I believe in broad diversification, in having money in the U.S. stock market, in foreign stock markets, in a little bit in gold, in you know, in as many asset classes, a little bit in real estate, a little exposure in real estate, might be your house, it might be other things, but some exposure to real estate. Having a well diversified, I'm not going to give you the percentages because the percentages depend on your age. Again, depend on your risk tolerance, depend on, you know, go to a financial advisor, but a good one. Not somebody who's going to send you on stocks, particular stocks. Not somebody who's going to sell you on individually managed mutual funds. Almost all mutual funds underperform an index. So what you want is index funds that cover as much of the market as possible. Index funds that cover as much of the market as possible. And then you just go to sleep at night and you don't worry about it. And you put money in and you rebalance. And this is, you need a good professional advisor for this, to rebalance once a year so you're not overexposed to any particular sectors. And they will also help you adjust based on how old you are. And I would do it all through mutual funds, particularly very cheap index funds. Index funds. Right? So, you know, that's how I would invest, unless you know something, unless you have particular expertise. But make sure you know stuff. Make sure you're better at it than anybody else. If you're in the technology world, you know, without using inside information, maybe you're in a better position to invest in technology companies. Maybe you know more about technology companies than other people. Then do that, right? But even then, diversify. You know, it's tragic. The number of people, for example, who had all their money in Enron, right, in their own company, because they thought, well, I know Enron. Enron's great. And then Enron goes bankrupt, and they lost everything, all of their retirement savings, gone like that. And I think this is related. Should I buy stock in my company at 5% employee discount or focus on my 401k or striking a balance? I work for a power company, extremely unlikely to go bust. Yeah, I mean, I would take the 5% discount, and then over time, I assume you can take the money out over time, take that money out and diversify. The advantage of a 401k is the tax savings. So I don't know. Can you put your company stock in the 401k? Can you get the same tax advantage? Right. So what you want to do is get that 5% discount, but then diversify as much as you can out of that over time, right? And as you said, it's a power company. It's unlikely to go bankrupt, but still, you still want to be diversified because it's also not going to get great returns. You want to have some exposure to tech. You want to have some exposure to China. You want to have some exposure to Europe, even though people are all negative about Europe. So you have to have nice diversification. But you always want to take advantage of discounts when you can. And you always want to play the tax game. You want to minimize taxes. So if you're going to save, get an IRA, get a Roth IRA, get a 401k account. Get all the ways in which you can take advantage of tax savings. Get a mortgage because you can deduct interest from your mortgage payment, so your interest becomes really low. So it becomes a pretty good source of capital for you to invest or to save in other things. Okay. All right, so consume within your means, but don't be shy about consumption. Live. I'm big on living. You only have one shot at this life. So live. Oh, somebody asked about, wait a minute, let me see if there was another question I didn't answer in the super chat. I thought there was one I postponed. Yeah, lack of market correction, diversity recommended. Yeah, so as I said, diversify. If you think you know that a market correction is happening, you know, but you have to really know. Almost always people don't know. I mean, if people know, then yeah, if I could trade in and out of the market as it corrects, I would make a lot of money, but I don't do that. You know, I'm, as I said, I'm estimating a recession sometime next year, or the latest in 2020. And I don't think I'm going to pull, unless things get really frothy and crazy and nutty, I'm not going to pull my money out of the stock market. Because I don't know when it's going to happen. And then when do I go back in? You want how much percentage contribution to put in a 401k? Just enough to get a total match or employer or more? I would say as much as you can afford. The more the better. Depending on, again, depends on how old you are and depends on what you can afford. So, again, I wouldn't, you know, and what your future prospects are. If you're going to be salaried for the rest of your life and you're depending on this for retirement, then try to max it out. And if you're, let's say, over 35, then you should be maxing out your 401k. You should certainly get as much of the employer match as you can, because that's free money. You should always go for the employer match. Never leave free money on the table. Always go for what your employer matches, or for a 5% discount, or for a tax saving. But then, If your prospects are you're going to be an employee for the rest of your life, which is not a bad thing, right? If you love your job, you know, you're going to get raises, but you're not going to jump whole categories. Then you want to save the max amount in your 401k for retirement, right? Landon Walsh is recommended health saving accounts. I second that recommendation. If your employer offers you one, or if you can get one through one of the exchanges, or something else, and absolutely get an HSA. It's the best way to save money for retirement. You know you're going to need money for healthcare when you retire. This is as the best tax characteristics, because you don't pay taxes when you put it in, and you don't pay taxes when you take it out. On a 401k, you're going to pay taxes when you take the money out. Here, you don't pay either way if you take the money out for healthcare. You can accumulate gazillions of dollars there, and you know you're going to need them for healthcare. So absolutely max out on your HSA. I would max out on my HSA before I maxed out on my 401k. So if you have a choice, max out on your HSA first. Right? They are truly awesome. Do you advise taking college courses to learn finance 101 or just learn yourself? It depends on you. You can learn it yourself. It's not that hard, but if it's easier for you to learn with a college course, if it's easier for you to learn when you have to do to get homework and things like that, then do homework. Right? Then do homework. Yeah, and of course, do IRAs. And you should max out your IRAs before you max out your 401k. So again, there's a sequence. Health saving accounts are number one. Number two is IRAs. Number three is 401ks. But always get the match on a 401k. So the 401k match is the number one, really. 401k to a match, then HSA, then IRAs, then 401k beyond the match. Any mistakes for entertainment? Ever made an investment where you slept bad and hoped it would work out, even if you usually sleep well? I've lost a lot of money on investments, other people's money and my own. Did I ever lose sleep over it? I don't think so. I mean, yes, when I lost other people's money, so I should correct. Never on my own money. Never on my own money. I mean, do I get giddy when I make money? No, I don't get giddy when I make money, and I don't get depressed when I lose it. So it is what it is. When I lose other people's money, that's difficult. That is very, very difficult. Because then, I don't know, it's your work. It's your self-esteem. It's what you do, right? So when my hedge fund loses money, and I made some other investment for other people in the past, most of them made money, and overall I've made huge amounts of money for people. But when I've lost money, it's felt awful. Felt awful. Yuan, could you explain what a 401k is for us young folks? A 401k is a program that your employer will set up where you can take money pre-tax and put it into this plan where you can invest it in all kinds of mutual funds. Every 401k has a different set of mutual funds. Again, you should do index funds generally. And you can, without a penalty, you can only withdraw that money when you retire after age 65. And at that point, it's taxed. So you defer all the taxes for when you're old age, which is always good if you can defer taxes. A 401k also often involves an employer match. So the employer will say, if you put $3,000 into the 401k, we'll put $3,000 into it as well. And that's what I meant by the match. So that's additional income you're getting that costs you nothing other than delayed consumption through savings. So I would take on debt in order to max out to the match of my 401k. I would take on debt. Have you heard that? I would take on debt in order to get the match of my 401k because that's free money. Free money. I'm willing to take on debt to get free money, right? What else can I tell you about 401k? There's a limit to how much you can put in a 401k. It's capped. I don't know what the cap is right now because I've lost my – I don't have a 401k anymore. But I think it was like just short of 20,000, maybe 17,000 a year, 18,000 a year, something like that. Okay? Please talk more about having spare cash to time the next recession. So this is the thing. If you're worried about a recession like for two reasons. One, because you might lose your job. Or second, you want to buy low. Then, yeah, you can sit on cash for a while to buy low. But that's always risky because timing is everything. And to time how much the market's going to go up before it goes down, how do you do that? So I don't typically do that. You can play that game, but I don't typically hold back cash to make investments when things are cheap. But I would hold back cash if you worry that when things get bad, you might lose your job. So I would put money in the bank to be able to survive while I was looking for more work. So put in, you should generally have a reserve. Again, when you're in your 30s and 40s, you should have a reserve of, I don't know, 3 to 6 months of salary. So let's say half a year's income in something liquid in the bank. Because you never know what's going to happen. You never know what could happen. Oh, Paul says the 401k limit is $18,500. You want to protect your downside. And you protect your downside by having cash. You don't want to have to rush out and sell in the marketplace. You don't want to have to undo your 401k because there's a huge penalty. So I'd say 6 months of cash in the bank after you're 35. When you're young, you can downscale your life. Again, if you have a family and it's hard for you to downscale your life, you have commitments, you have to live by those commitments, then that's kind of what I would do. All right, any other Super Chat questions? Any mistakes for entertainment? Any mistakes I made? Investment mistakes? I don't know what kind of mistakes. I'll give you an example. In April of 1999. January of 1999, I bought put options. Put options are bet that a stock would go down. I bought put options on Amazon stock. And you can roll. So, and they were 3-month put options. So the bet is for 3 months. And I lost it all, right? Because Amazon stock went up. And in 1999, Amazon went through the roof. It didn't go up, it went through the roof. And then I bought put options again in March, and Amazon went up more, and I lost all of that. And if I'd done it in January of 2000, I would have made a fortune, because at least in March of 2000, Amazon started going like this, and Amazon took a huge beating, like all tech stocks, probably lost 50% at least in later 2000. So if I had just waited a year, and this is my thing about timing, I'm awful at timing these things. If I'd waited a year and bet on Amazon stock declining in 2000, I would have made a fortune. I don't know if that's entertaining, but there's a story. Do you think the next recession is going to be worse than the financial crisis? That's a tough one. Right now, I'm thinking no, because I don't think it's going to involve a financial meltdown like we saw in 2008. I don't think you're going to see financial institutions go bankrupt, because generally, I think they're in better shape than they were in 2007. There are bubbles out there, but I don't see a bubble so crazy like the mortgage-backed securities bubble and all the leverage that then involved. So while I think, while I think that there is that a lot of assets are probably overvalued right now, commercial real estate, the stock market potentially, some other things, I just don't see the kind of financial meltdown we saw in 2008 happening again. Now, granted, I didn't foresee it happening then, although the signs were there. I just don't see the signs right now, now that I'm looking. So I think it'll be a recession, not a, great recession, which is what 2008 was, right? I don't see a great recession yet. At some point, we're going to have a great, 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 great recession. So at some point, government spending is going to go so out of control, government debt is going to so explode that we could have, something like stagnation or even a recession with high inflation. So Pooja asked, isn't 401k iffy? Government can get a hold of it if the economy goes bad. Is this concern realistic for salary people? But any savings they could get a hold of. They could take anything. Why are you singling out 401ks? Remember, FDR confiscated all the gold, private held gold in the economy. So basically, you were not allowed to have a bag of gold in your house. You were not allowed to have gold coins for investment. You were not allowed to have gold bars. It was confiscated, or the government bought it from you, but you couldn't keep it. They could take away anything. So, I don't know. I don't think the world is quite at the point where 401ks are going to be confiscated. Now, Elizabeth Warren gets elected president because of Trump. Anything's possible at that point. Ask me then what I think when Elizabeth Warren is president. Could you please comment on Trump tariffs on Turkey? I'm against tariffs. You have a beef with Turkey, boycott them. Kick them out of NATO. I don't know. There are lots of things you could do without this stupid mechanism of raising taxes on your own people. It's just stupid. So I don't believe in tariffs. I believe all tariffs should be zero always, no matter what the other country does. If the other country is doing stuff and you want to put pressure on them, then cut, ban certain activities with them, right? Ban them. Don't tax them. Ban them. So as I said many, many, many times, right? If you're concerned about China stealing our IP, ban products that involve stolen IP into coming into America. In other words, put 100% tariff on them. Not 100%. An infinite tariff on them. You just can't sell them in the United States. Right? So boycott is, tariff is a tax on us, on American people. A boycott is saying this country has done something so egregious that we should not trade with them. Fine, I'm fine with some countries doing that. Or like we're doing with Russia right now, I don't know, restrict certain economic activities. Don't let them invest in the United States. Or don't, there are lots of things you could do. But of course, if I was running foreign policy, we would have never gotten this mess with Turkey to begin with. So it's hard once you completely mess up, foreign policy, it's very hard then to say, well, I don't have any tools to deal with this situation. Yeah, because you screwed up your foreign policy because you don't know what you're doing. And Trump certainly doesn't know what they're doing. Obama didn't know what he was doing. Bush didn't know what he was doing. We haven't had a decent foreign policy since the Second World War. So none of these people know what they're doing. And once you get into trouble foreign policy-wise, don't use tariffs. Don't tax yourself. So I'm never for tariffs. I'm for banning products when it's appropriate. I'm for boycotting. I'm for blockading countries and not letting anybody trade with them because their enemies and they're so horrific, like the blockade of Cuba during the missile crisis. That's all good. I'm all fine with that. Just tariffs are stupid. Tariffs are taxes, and they're not tools for anything. Okay. What kind of fields are you into looking to invest in? He's curious. Look, I have a hedge fund. My hedge fund does one thing. It does one thing only, and I'm not going to say what it is because, again, I can just – the SEC is ridiculous about these things, and anything that seems like I'm pitching the hedge fund to you guys is illegal. So I'm not going to say what it does, but it specializes. It's very, very focused, very, very narrow, very, very focused, and that's all I invest in. When I invest from my retirement, so I either put money in my hedge fund, so I invest in myself. This is what I said about investing in yourself, or I diversify. I don't know anything about tech. I think I'm an expert, right, on this or that, but I don't know anything about tech, not enough to invest in. I don't know anything about energy. You know, maybe Alex Epstein knows enough about energy companies, enough about energy to invest in energy. I can't, don't know anything about it. And if I did research, it would have to become, to really be good at picking companies, it would have to be my full-time job. Not a good use of my time. Not a good use of it. I'm already doing that in my one field. So unless you're willing to dedicate significant amount of time to research, don't invest in individual stocks. Invest in well-diversified mutual funds. Yes, the SEC definitely limits my free speech. Somebody asked me that. Yes, the SEC is limiting my free speech. We have lots of limitation on free speech. The one area in which in American life your free speech is dramatically limited is in the commercial area. Through regulations, through restrictions, you are dramatically, free speech is restricted because the Supreme Court has never really defended free speech in commercial life, free speech in business. I don't have any particular course or book to learn Finance 101. I apologize. I do have an investing course that is available in the Ayn Rand Institute e-store. This is the caveat. I did it a long time ago, 1998. Not everything I say there is true. Most of it is, I'd say 80% of it is right. You'll learn a lot from it, but it's dated. The examples I give are very dated. And some things I would change my mind about. I've changed my mind about. All right. All right, good. I think we're done. I've said, I think, everything I want to say. I want to make this point. Be explicit about your goals. Know what you want in life. Take time, real effort, to focus on figuring out your goals. And your investment, saving, consumption, debt have to fit into your goals. You cannot separate. You cannot separate. You cannot separate the your life goals from your investment goals, your life goals from your debt, your life goals from everything else. It has to be integrated. It has to be integrated. So your decisions about debt, about consumption, about investment have to be integrated into your other goals. And you have to prioritize them based on your hierarchy of values, your values. Right? Somebody asked me what I think of Tony Robbins' books. I don't know Tony Robbins' books, so I can't comment. All right? I mean, that's the way to think about it. And then study as much finances as necessary or get a good financial advisor, but only get a financial advisor if, when they advise you, they're advising you about diversification, index fund, test them. Ask them what mutual funds you think they should. They think you should invest in. And if they say, oh, I've got a guy who beats the market every year, I've got some mutual funds that are just spectacular, walk away. But if they say the best approach is a well-diversified approach where you pay very little fees, where you buy the market, and then the real art, if you will, in it, or the science, if you will, in it, is how you allocate, how much in bonds, how much in stocks, what kind of stocks. You might want an overweighting in value stock because history shows that, you know, maybe, right? But generally, then I would hire that guy or gal, right? And they're going to be cheap. And they're going to, you know, and they realize the value of portfolio theory and diversification. That's what I would say would should be almost everybody's approach. Almost, I said everybody's approach to investing that money that you're not investing in yourself, in your own business, in your own activities. All right? Okay. Thanks, guys. Always fun. If you enjoy these, if you get value out of them, don't forget to take some of your consumption, I guess. Maybe it's investment. And make a contribution towards this show and towards the continuation of the show on Patreon. That would be really terrific. We're trying to get a 500. I think we're trying to get a 500 patrons this month. So even if you can only do $1 or $2, I would greatly appreciate it. The second thing you can do, most important thing in some senses you could do, is share. Right? Share the shows. Somebody said they don't like to share the shows because right in that first minute is silence. I'm not doing anything or I'm waiting for the show to start. Well, what I'm doing with the videos is I'm going back and clipping that minute out. So the videos, it takes a few hours for YouTube to get the edited video up. But if you share a day later, you're going to get a clean video. So please share the videos, particularly a video like this. It's not offensive to anybody except maybe to Dave Ramsey. And I think it's a value to a lot of your friends. And if maybe one of your friends will get hooked on this and through this, discover some of my other great shows and follow me. So subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet. And I tend to do more shows like this, more shows geared towards, I don't know, self-help, living your life, being happy, which is all connected, which is all linked. I intend to do more shows geared towards that. So share, subscribe, contribute. Thanks a lot, everybody. And I will talk to you tomorrow. We're going to do a show. Oh, by the way, we're going to do a show every week, every day this week. Every single day we're going to do a show. Because after that, I'm like going to Brazil and I don't know when I'll be able to do shows. So we're going to cram them in this week and early next week. Well, maybe not early next week because I'm going to Chicago. But we're going to cram them in this week. So that you have plenty to listen to while I'm traveling, all right? Plus, I'll be releasing lots of videos while I'm traveling of old stuff that I did that maybe you haven't seen. So there'll be constantly new material, another reason for you to support the show on Patreon. And that makes it possible for me to go to Brazil and speak in front of thousands of people. That makes it possible for me to do all these fun stuff. Oh, we're going to be announcing a really exciting event in London soon. I think I'm going to be doing a panel, a discussion, a conversation with Douglas Murray. If you don't know who Douglas Murray, look him. If you don't know who he is, look him up. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm excited about it. I'm not, unfortunately, coming to Porto Alegre when I'm going to be in Brazil. I'm giving talks in São Paulo, Rio, Belo Horizonte, and Vitória. And I know I butchered those names, but that's where I'm going to be. I was in Porto Alegre in April. You missed me in April? I'll be back in Porto Alegre either next April or the April after that. I love Porto Alegre. I love the people there in particular. Thanks, everybody, and we are off. Bye.